Okay, our next presentation this morning will be from Catherine Clark, who is from University of Delaware. Her topic of her title is using electrical resistivity imaging to characterize subsurface phosphorus movement to drainage ditches.
Thank you for the introduction. Hello everyone, my name is Catherine Clark, and today I'm going to be talking about how we're using electrical resistivity to look at some of those subsurface flow paths that are occurring in artificially drained fields in the Delmarva region. And we're looking in the Delmarva region because it experiences some very unique problems when it comes to phosphorus management. So what exactly is the problem with phosphorus in the Delmarva? In short, the answer boils down to chickens. So we have very intensive poultry production in the Delmarva. We actually produce 550 million chickens a year. So there's a lot of chicken houses in the Delmarva region, and farmers need to grow grain crops to feed the poultry. So agriculture is a necessity. But we have sandy, poorly drained soils, and for that reason, ditching is necessary for agriculture to actually occur. And then along with the poultry industry, we also have a lot of poultry litter that then needs to be applied to the land. So farmers have traditionally applied the poultry litter at nitrogen-based rates. And that was because of the thought that phosphorus mainly remained tied up in the soil and then was only transported as particulate P. So it was thought that farmers could apply at the nitrogen-based rates without risk of phosphorus moving to the environment. However, we're starting to really see that that is not the case. And in fact, a lot of that phosphorus can stay in the water-soluble form and be transported. And because we had, and the reason it's staying in that water-soluble form is because we had such high levels of phosphorus build up over the years that we have what's called legacy phosphorus. So that legacy phosphorus has saturated all the points or all the places in soil where the phosphorus can bind, and it stays in the water-soluble form when additional manure or fertilizer is applied. So, with the high levels of water extractable P, especially in the topsoil, what we're seeing is that the case may be in that when there's heavy rain events, for example, the water table can rise up into that high phosphorus level or high phosphorus area and then transport it via subsurface lateral flow. So that subsurface lateral flow then moves this water extractable phosphorus to the drainage ditches, and in Kleinman 2007, they actually hypothesized that 90% of the phosphorus that ends up in the ditch water is actually transported in this way. And so what we're seeing then is that only 10% is transported in overland flow, and that's because we have extremely flat topography. It's as flat as a pancake in the Delmarva, so we're not really seeing a lot of runoff contributing water to the ditches. It's mostly through this subsurface flow pathways. But we wanted to be able to figure out a way to look at those subsurface flow pathways without destroying agricultural fields. So how are we going to look at the surface without, you know, messing up the farmers' fields? We decided to use electrical resistivity imaging, otherwise known as ERI. I'll be referring to it as that. So ERI is basically a setup that we can place electrodes on the surface of the ground and then inject a current into those electrodes and measure changes in resistivity through different potential electrodes. And by looking at changes in resistivity, it's measuring the voltage impedance, which then relates the resistivity. And then we can also look at that as resistivity is the inverse of conductivity. So we can see changes in moisture content. We can see the application of like a salt tracer or something like that. And then the beauty of ERI is that we can then apply various measurement sequences depending on what we are particularly looking at for this study. So we can then process that data in either 2D or 3D. So we can actually look at it as a grid, or we can look at it as like a slice through a profile. So that example at the bottom there would be like a slice through a profile. So that brings us to the research objective for this presentation. We are trying to characterize these subsurface flow pathways where we believe that phosphorus is moving. And we're looking at a ditched field site in the Delmarva region at the University of Maryland Eastern Shore Research Farm. And then we're also going to be using a conservative tracer to monitor with the ERI. And the reason we're choosing that conservative tracer is because we can see how the water flow pathways are occurring. We know it's not necessarily relatable to phosphorus, but because we're trying to look at those water flow pathways where the water extractable P is moving, we can actually use the potassium bromide to see those pathways. So our site where we are doing the study is at UMES, the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, and you can see where it's located on the eastern shore of Maryland, so very close to the Chesapeake Bay. And we actually did a preliminary salt tracer study back in October of 2014. And for that study, we actually used a sodium chloride tracer just to see how it worked. And we were really testing different application methods at that time. So we were applying it periodically through a period of 108 minutes into a 96 electrode array. And then we were doing an irrigation area. And then we also injected the sodium chloride into two different wells at different depths. And really, we were just testing to see if we would actually be able to see the tracer infiltrating and potentially moving at that time. And what we could see was that infiltration of the tracer occurred. So this is at the end of the study. We could see the tracer was definitely evident. You can really see it in the irrigation area. This is showing change in resistivity from the background level. So the red areas experienced the most change. And we didn't see much lateral movement in this case. We mostly saw it infiltrating downward, but that was because of the limited time period and also the dry soil conditions at that time. So for our current site design, we actually doubled the number of electrodes that we were using, and we set up an electrode grid with 192 electrodes. And you can see where we placed that grid on the farm, which is located next to a field ditch there. So we located that there, and then here is a picture of the grid. That's me there when we set it up in March. And I showed an example of where some of the electrodes are placed, but they're placed throughout that entire grid. And then the circled areas are three of our five hydrologic monitoring stations. So at each hydrologic monitoring station, we have a 25-centimeter well, as well as a 100-centimeter deep well screened from 25 to 100. And then, so at each of those wells, we can then monitor water table depth and also electrical connectivity. So we can maybe see some of the things, corroborate some of the information that we're seeing with ERI. And then we also have soil moisture samplers set up throughout the grid as well. And here's an example of one of the hydrologic monitoring stations. So you can see how we have the wells placed next to each other, one screened from 0 to 25 and one from 25 to 100, and then the soil moisture samplers, and their data is all being collected with Decagon data loggers. So we had a monitoring event in early October of 2015, and we ended up deciding to apply our potassium bromide tracer via a trench. So we dug a trench to 25 centimeters deep, and we chose that depth because that is the primary depth where most of the phosphorus is that could be moving, the high phosphorus, water-soluble phosphorus areas. And we filled that trench with gravel so that we could then apply the tracer on top of the trench and allow rainwater to activate it and move it down into the profile. So we had a significant storm predicted in early October 2015, and prior to this significant predicted storm, we applied 4 kilograms of the potassium bromide across the surface of the trench. And then we actually didn't get as much rain as was originally predicted. We only got about 3.8 centimeters throughout the entire day, several day long rainfall event. So what exactly did we see during this event? These are the effects of rainfall on water table depth. So we have the rainfall on the top here, so you can see in centimeters how much rainfall occurred throughout October 1st through the end of October 5th. And you can see where it peaked, and what we can see is the water table did come up. It didn't come up into that 25 centimeter range, but we were able to see that there's a lot of variation between the water tables located within this very small grid. I mean, it's only 7 meters by about 24 meters. So, or actually 7 meters by 12 meters, sorry. And you can see that the pattern exhibited by the field well is a little different from the others. It's this yellow one here. And we think that's because it's located right next to the trench where we were, where it was dug out. So that was probably affecting the water table depth a little bit there. But you can see in the right well over here, that actually came up to around 40 to 30 centimeters below the surface of the ground. So what we're seeing is that there's definitely some hot spots where water table behaves a little differently than in some areas. And these are all very close together, so it was interesting to see that. So we were able to look at the application of the tracer prior to the rain event, and then we were able to see the tracer and throughout the rain event. So this is a surface view, and it's showing change in conductivity from a background level. So the red areas are the most change, whereas the blue areas are maybe indicating just the change in moisture content from the rain. So this is prior to the rain event, and then after we applied the tracer and rain started, you can actually see the tracer was activated, so that's good. And then after the bulk of the rain, we can see that the tracer was fully activated, but it doesn't look like it moved laterally at all. And so in another view, we can see it's a little hard to tell the scale in, it is the scale in meters, but it's a little hard to tell how the depths work out in this, in these images. But what we can see is that first the tracer was activated, and then after the rain event, we can see that once the tracer was fully activated, it actually moved below the trench. So while it didn't move laterally, it did infiltrate downward. And the maximum change in conductivity for this image is actually between about 0.5 and 0.75 meters. So we know that's below the 0.25 of the trench depth. So it could have moved down because of the dry conditions of the soil. So as the rain falls, it's infiltrating downward first, and then maybe once the water table comes up, it would move laterally. But we didn't really see the water table come up above about 40 centimeters. So we also may have some effects of changes in density between the native water and also the salt could have an increased density, which causes it to sink a little more. So we're going to have to monitor this over the next few weeks and different rain events and see if it does start to move laterally or not. So, conclusions and next steps. What we saw was literal lateral movement during the dry soil conditions. And we did have very dry soil conditions during this October storm. So even though we got some rain, we didn't get a lot, and it wasn't really enough to activate the water table to higher levels, which we're going to see hopefully this winter. And so we really need to continue monitoring this bromide movement throughout the winter. We want to see it during how it's moving during periods with high water table, which would be like winter conditions. And then also we want to see if it primarily moves during specific heavy rainfall events. So we want to monitor it through those events too. And we're hopeful that we'll be able to see some movement this winter. We have an increased level of precipitation predicted through this winter due to the El Nino year, so we're hoping that we might actually see some potential lateral movement or not, and so we just need to really monitor it throughout the winter. So the implications of this research, we're really trying to understand how soil and hydrology are influencing water flow and how that can then subsequently affect phosphorus movement. And hopefully with this information, we'll then be able to assess risk of subsurface phosphorus movement in future versions of P-risk assessment tools. So just thank you so much to everyone who helped me out with this project, and at this time, I'll be taking questions.
Okay, we've got time for a couple questions for Catherine.
Yes. Well, it's a little hard to tell that exact. Well, the question was how, what is the concentration of the salt in the trench? And it's really hard to tell that based on how the application method that we ended up using. So it's activated by rainwater. So it might be interesting to look into a way that we could potentially measure that, but we really don't know with the setup that we currently have if how what the effects could be on dispersion or density. So that's something we're still kind of in the works of trying to figure out.
And then just how does the resistivity compare to like TDR
I think it's a similar method, but the ERI really allows us to look at it 3D in a larger grid instead of at specific points. So that's the advantage of using the ERI. And it also allows us to look at it over time, so run it frequently throughout storm events so that we can see at different time points and create some pretty cool videos even during showing time-lapse changes. So I think that's the advantage of using ERI over something like TDR.
Okay, let's give Catherine one more round of applause.